This is the Yahoo Sports NBA Podcast, hosted by Chris Mannix. From interviews.
Let's bring in John Wall.
He's Reggie Miller.
Bring in Eric Spoelstra.
To the latest NBA news. To insights you won't get anywhere else.
Rioting is bad. You shouldn't riot.
Past episodes of the podcast can be downloaded in the iTunes Store and Google Play.
Why wouldn't you go back?
Subscribe and leave a rating or comment. Here he is.
Speaking of guys putting their foot in the road,
Chris Mannix.
Yes.
All right, my guest on location, special on location Yahoo Sports podcast in Portland. And in Portland, I find a guy also from the Boston area, Paul Flannery, SB Nation. What's up, Paul?
Hey, Chris. I came all the way to Portland just to see you.
I know. It's not like you see me enough on the East Coast. But the two of us in Portland, it's, you know, there's a reason for that. You know, the Portland Trail Blazers are the hottest team in the NBA. Due respect to the Toronto Raptors. Portland now won 10 straight. We're recording this from the bowels of the Moda Center here. After Portland knocks off Miami. And, you know, this is like the second year in a row, actually third year in a row, that this team is just, you know, playing great basketball. Last year, you know, you had the Nurkic deal, and that was kind of the push for all this. This year, I'm not exactly sure what it is, Paul, except that maybe this team shouldn't have been as average as they were to start the season, 12 guys coming back, but what do you make of the last 10 games of this team?
I think there's a little bit of that. I think, yeah, I was a little disappointed in them for the first half of the season, even though, you know, and their defense has been a lot better, and so you would have thought that everything would have flowed that way. But, you know, they've been home for a long time, as you know. You've been here for a while.
I'm taking up residency.
You are taking up. I just got here.
Yeah,
you're going to show me around. You are now a Portlandia resident. Mm-hmm. But things have kind of broken their way schedule wise. Miami was that Whiteside and Dwayne Wade tonight. I know Steph missed the game against Golden State. Go down the line. Jimmy Butler missed the Minnesota game, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You still got to win these games. I don't know, maybe something about the time of the year. I mean, Dame takes his game to another level down the stretch, which, you know, really good players do, but he does it consistently year after year after year, and he's been awesome.
Yeah, and look, you know, a guy like Zach Collins has come in over the last month. He's really played good basketball. It's given them another weapon in that rotation. And, you know, Neil O'Shea in the front office took a lot of grief, or at least some grief, to move up and draft Zach Collins. We've all heard, you know, Donovan Mitchell was there, and as Mitchell's rises, you know, those questions come up. But I'll tell you, I've watched Zach Collins a lot this month, and he's really coming into his own as a perimeter shooter. He still fouls, you know, sporadically, and that's kind of an Achilles heel for him, as it was in college. But, you know, I've seen him play into the fourth quarter, deep minutes, being given a lot of minutes by Terry Stotts. He's been a real weapon for this team.
Well, as you know, we are NBA draft experts.
Clearly, yes.
Connoisseurs of 18-year-old talent. But look, I mean, it takes a while for these guys to click. Zach Collins clearly had skills. And I think everybody said last year going into the draft, it's probably going to take him a little bit longer. Wasn't he like the youngest kid?
Yeah, one of the first time, freshman to come out of Gonzaga.
Gonzaga. I mean, I saw him in the locker room tonight for the first time up close. I was like, wow. I said, wow, he's a child. Mm-hmm. He looks so young. And so it takes a minute, you know. And, okay, Donovan Mitchell. It's one of those things. It's like everybody should have drafted Donovan Mitchell, right? Well, where did he go? 15?
13.
Well, you know, 9 other teams could have drafted Donovan Mitchell, right? It's like same thing with Giannis. Well, everybody should have drafted Giannis. So, yeah, I get it. But Zach Collins for this team, pretty good, because it turns out they got two good guards.
Yeah.
Right? What do they need another one for?
Yeah, and you know, one of the reasons that they struggled early in the season, that Nurkic has been very inconsistent. I know Terry Stotts has not shied away from being critical of Nurkic and, you know, just his ability to finish at the rim and his overall effort offensively. But, you know, against Miami, you know, we saw the best of both. Nurkic on the inside, scoring at the rim, defending at a high level. When this guy's playing well, this team is every bit as tough as the team we thought they were going to be at the end of last year before he got hurt.
Oh, yeah, totally. And I thought it was interesting. 3 or 4 of the first 5 possessions, Dame went right to Nurkic, right on the pick and roll. And I asked him about it after the game, and he said, yeah, no, I mean, that's the way they were playing it, and I'm going to go to him every time. It's the right play, blah, 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 blah. But at the same time, you get that guy going in the first quarter, and then he keeps going in the fourth quarter, right? And so, I don't know. Big men are weird like that, right?
Yeah.
But 26 and 16 or 27 and 16, something ridiculous like that. If he plays like that, then we got to reconsider what we think of this Portland team.
Well, that's the next question, because, you know, look, I think they're probably going to remain that 3 seed based on how they're playing and how everybody around them is kind of dealing with certain things. The Minnesota injury, Anthony Davis, his injury, coupled with the Cousins being out, Oklahoma City, they're kind of all over the place right now, too. I think they stay at three, but I don't know what that means yet. Does it mean they win a series? Yeah, yeah, probably they've done it two of the last 4 years. They can get to the second round of the playoffs. But is this team a legitimate threat against either Houston or Golden State in the second round?
I mean, that I don't know. I'd like to sit here and say yeah, you know, make it interesting. But to me, Houston and Golden State are just on a different level than everybody else. And that includes everybody in the East, too. I know we're going to talk about some of those teams. But probably not. I mean, I'd love to give you a better answer than that and say, yes, this team is legit. This team is the X factor. They're the one to watch. And you're right. They if they stay in that three spot, they should win a first-round series, get to a semifinal for, what, the third time in 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not a bad little accomplishment, but it's a little accomplishment.
I think that they have – if everything breaks right for this team – they can compete with the Houston or Golden State. Maybe not beat them, but they can compete with them because, you know, when Evan Turner is out there, and Evan Turner gets vilified out here a little bit too much for the contract. It's not Evan's fault that he, you know.
I would have signed it too.
Sign the damn contract. Like, Evan is a good player. Evan is a facilitator. He is a – I think he should be in consideration for all defensive team this year. And, you know, you see him on the floor, end of game situations, you know, making the hockey pass, doing all those things. When he's playing high level, when Nurkic is playing high level, and you know most nights CJ and Damian Lillard are going to play at a high level, they're tough. So, you know, it's hard to predict anybody, you know, but Houston or Golden State beating Houston or Golden State. But if I look down the list of the teams that could be a threat to them, Portland might be at the top of it with all those guys playing.
Yeah, and let me qualify that, because any team with Damian Lillard is going to compete.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he's capable of shooting you into any single game, and we've seen it. And
he has no conscience from, like, 25 feet out. He's willing to pull up and just fire away. And he is great at, and I was talking to a couple of scouts about this tonight, he is great at coming off that screen and drawing contact. I don't know what the numbers are for most times fouled beyond the three-point line, but Damian's got to be up there.
Well, anybody who stayed up and watched this game, he was not really hitting the shot early. He had like 8 points, something, you know, it was 2 for 8. What did he do? He went slow, he got fouled, he got to the line, he made 3 free throws, and then he went, right? And then he finished with 30 points. He's so smart at that. Yeah, he's legit. He is a star. The thing was, well, he's not a two-way player. Well, okay, he's never going to be all defense. But, you know, he's picked it up on that end. He is a legit star. I was real happy when he made the All-Star team with no fuss, no muss, no alternate. Just made the All-Star team, right? No more of that. He's because he should. He should be in that conversation.
What's this team missing? You know, I mean, look, that you can use probably another 3-4 men that could shoot. I mean, Al Farouq Aminu was missing everything tonight. He had, I think, one made three, and he was being left open a lot. If you can replace, but he does give them a lot defensively, so there's that. But I think another shooter maybe in the mix could be big for them. I think Collins will continue to develop, but you know, that 3-4 spot, maybe shoring that up has got to be the key for
Kevin
that.
Durant would help.
Kevin Durant would help everybody. Yes.
He would really help. No, you're right. I mean, they could really use a 3-4 who can shoot. And during the playoffs, Aminu is going to
draft him, though. They've spent themselves into a hole.
God, Aminu is going to get so many open threes in the postseason, they're just going to not even guard him. And, you know, he's got to make them. He's got to make 4 out of 10 if they're going to leave him that open.
Yeah, I don't know if he can do that. But Portland's certainly a pretty interesting team right now. All right, let's move back to Boston. And, you know, the Celtics playing good basketball since the All-Star break, but all that was kind of scuttled that momentum with the injury news. Kyrie Irving is one thing, was from what we hear right now, not serious, more precautionary, going to rest that knee, make sure he's ready for the playoffs. The more significant issues are Daniel Theis, done for the season, meniscus tear, and Marcus Smart, who has been really the flashpoint, the lightning rod for everything they've done post-All-Star break. He's got a ligament problem in his thumb. We don't know yet as we speak exactly how long he's going to be out, but you know, I guess let's start with Smart, because if he's out for an extended period of time, I look at Marcus Smart as being irreplaceable. I look at Marcus Smart and what he brings defensively and sort of the level that he raises the rest of the team up to. I don't know how you replace him. I love Terry Rozier, but if you're plugging like Rozier for extra minutes, Shane Larkin into those spots, there's a drop-off. There's a legitimate drop-off. They better hope that Marcus Smart is able to go in the playoffs.
They're a completely different team with Marcus Smart than without him. I mean, you've seen it night in and night out. And it's weird because he doesn't do the technical things that you associate with being like a really good player. He can't shoot, as we know. But when he's on the court, he gives them an extra dimension that other teams can't match. I mean, we've seen him guard Kristaps Porzingis. We've seen him guard Steph Curry. We've seen him guard every single player you could possibly imagine in this league, and he likes doing it. And, you know, especially in a postseason situation, you need Marcus Smart out there. He's the guy you need in a game. Without Marcus Smart, I think they've got problems to begin with before we even got to this point. But without him, I'm really not sold on him.
Yeah, without him, you know, they could be, honestly, first-round fodder right there. I mean, given what could be waiting for them at the back end of the Eastern Conference, let's assume they stay at the number two spot. There are a number of teams, I think, that would give them hell, especially when you got to go to that second unit and not have Marcus Smart. But Daniel Theis, I don't look at Theis as being irreplaceable. It certainly hurts, but this is why you brought Greg Monroe in, right? Now, Greg Monroe is not Daniel Theis. He doesn't space the floor. He's not mobile in the way that Theis is. But I've always thought that Monroe, give him even more minutes, he's going to put up points. Like, you'll look at the stat sheet end of the night for Greg Monroe, and he's going to be 12-10, you know, 11-8, something like that. They'll miss Theis, no question, especially another guy that brought high energy when he came into the game. But this to me is a big opportunity for Greg Monroe to step in and play bigger minutes.
One of my favorite things about early in the season was watching Daniel Theis show every other team in the league, oh, wait, this guy can play.
Where'd he come from? This guy's a German League All-Star.
Where'd this guy come from? He can play. And no, Theis is really good, and I think he's got a really nice future. I think he's going to continue getting better and better. But this kind of solves a problem for them, which is Monroe needs to play in order to be productive. It's not like you can put him out there for 10 minutes and hope he gets 6 points and four boards. That's not what Greg Monroe does. You got to play him. You got to run through him a little bit. And they kind of had a weird logjam with Baines and Theis and Monroe, obviously Horford. And this kind of helps, you know, solve that just a little bit. That said, Theis is good. He's really good. And this is a problem for them. I mean, that's not the big man I would choose to take out of the lineup, mm-hmm. put it that way. But it does open things up for Monroe, and he's got to be huge in the playoffs. He's got to be huge.
Yeah, and I think having a more physical big out there is going to benefit them against some of these Eastern Conference powers. I mean, well, Detroit's not going to make the playoffs, but let's look at like a future matchup with Toronto and Valanciunas and what they've been able to do physically. Cleveland plays physical with their front line. You know, Theis, you know, can be overmatched physically playing the five. He's a smaller five man, and Brad Stevens likes to play him in that five spot. Now you have Monroe in there. I think you can match up more better physically with some of those teams.
You might be able to. It's interesting with Brad's offenses. They do not necessarily run through the traditional big man in the post look, right?
Well, they never had.
No.
You know, Monroe was the first time. That's the first time in the Brad Stevens era mm-hmm. where they had a guy you could just play dump and chase with.
Right.
Before that, it's like Sullinger. It's Kelly Olynyk. It's a whole bunch of other guys. First time that they've had that type of weapon.
Right. And so it'll be interesting to see how they adjust to that. But, yeah, he's got, you know, and I could see a scenario where second quarter becomes Greg Monroe time, right? Post up, post up, post up, post up. Just run
it should. There were a couple of games in the last month that seemed to be the way they were going, and it worked. Like, he got to the free throw line.
Right.
I mean, poor Willie Hernangómez was just brutalized in a game a couple of weeks back. But a couple of guys, they put undersized guys on Greg Monroe, and he knows just how to attack them.
Yeah, but, you know, the larger issue here, Chris, is they've got a lot of problems going into the playoffs. And, you know, and now Jaylen Brown as well, which we haven't even talked about. But I don't know how you feel about this. I've thought that they were playing way above their heads when they were leading the Eastern Conference and kind of came back to earth really hard and were able to solidify it. But without these guys, I think it could be problematic for them.
I think it could, too. I thought they were playing above their heads as well. I still thought they were better than Cleveland, you know, as recently as a month or so ago before the trade the Cavaliers make. I am now all in buying Toronto. Like, I'm a believer.
You're in.
I'm a believer in Toronto. Like, who knows? I don't know what happens in the Eastern Conference playoffs. I think anything could happen in the Eastern Conference playoffs. But I'm a believer that Toronto is not going to become like the old Raptors in the playoffs, that we're not going to see it be Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, that we are going to see this free-flowing offense that we've seen from them all season long. I'm a believer in Van Vliet, who made a huge shot the other night. I'm a believer in Wright, in Pascal Siakam, like the bench guys that are giving them 40 a night. I'm a believer that team will show up in the playoffs. And that's the type of team, too, that knows, just like Houston. I look at Toronto the same way, not on the same talent level, but I think Toronto knows that this could be their year. Like, this is the year that at the very least they should get to the finals. You've got veterans on the starting lineup. You've got good quality young guys coming off the bench. I think they recognize that, and that makes them hungrier, and I think that's huge.
Do you have your global entry in order?
I'll go back to Toronto. Quick flight from the Porter Airlines?
Porter Airlines. Porter,
give a quick plug in the podcast.
Right. This is what I believe in. I believe in LeBron in the Eastern Conference playoffs.
Oh, you're like Nick Wright, my guy from Fox, who like loves him some LeBron and thinks
he's kind of good.
He's really good, but thinks LeBron cures all woes. He does not. He does not solve their defensive issues. Their defensive issues are glaring. And I love, Paul, I love right now that everyone is saying, well, wait till Kevin Love comes back. Could you imagine like 6 months ago that people would be like, Kevin Love is the... And then Kevin Love can be great offensively.
How bad defensively were they last year going into the playoffs?
Not this bad. Not this bad. This year, I think they're significantly worse. And I thought they'd get better with the trades. They got more athletic, but, you know, Hood... Nance, who's playing, you know, well offensively as a five, but we've seen him be overmatched physically when teams post him up a little bit. I don't know. I don't think their problems were solved defensively, and they're going to be glaring. I don't think there's a switch you flip and become a great defensive team in the playoffs.
Yeah, no, I mean, I agree with a lot of what you're saying, and I'm a little disappointed in them after the initial return from the trade looked so promising, and I loved all the guys they added. I loved George Hill specifically. Nance, you mentioned, he's tremendous there. You know, Hood and Clarkson, great, awesome, great. Let's go play. But I've been disappointed in how they've responded so far, and it is difficult. I mean, teams that are able to quote unquote flip the switch have been together for a long time. Mm. They know each other. They know each other inside out, and they just say, "Okay, time to go, guys." This team has been together for like a month.
Yeah,
and so that's really hard. I hear everything you're saying. You're still going.
It's LeBron.
It's been a while since he lost.
8 years, right?
Yeah. And I didn't believe that one either while it was happening.
The what?
The 2010 when the Celtics knocked them out.
Yeah.
I didn't believe that one until it was over either. So Toronto is clearly the best team in the East. I don't think there's any conversation, you know, no discussion, no argument for me on that one. And I love the way they play. And I want to believe. I want to believe in the Raptors, man. I want to go to Toronto. Toronto's a great city. Let's go to Toronto in June. I'm down for that.
I think the irony of, you know, Toronto, I agree is the better team. But Toronto in the finals, I think they get rolled by either Houston or
Agreed.
Golden State. I think Cleveland gets obliterated. I think it's a four-game series against either Houston or Golden State. Boston, I actually think, gives those teams a better series. I based that largely in the last 2 years. Last 2 years, you know, Boston's gone to – last 3 years, two of the last 3 years, they've gone to Oakland and they've won. They have played Golden State extremely well over the last couple of years, including the win at home just last November. Same thing with Houston. They beat Houston. Boston gave them hell down Houston. There's something about those matchups and the way the Celtics plan their defense that I think they'd be the more difficult matchup for either Houston or Golden State.
Marcus Smart.
Yeah. I mean, Marcus Smart, he's going to get paid. I don't know who's going to pay him, but he has earned himself some money.
Somebody should. He's really good.
His defense is top-notch, but I don't know. I am a believer in Toronto now. I think Toronto is going to be just really, really tough. I don't think their bench is going to fold. I don't think DeRozan and Lowry are going to, you know, go back to that same isolation-heavy offense they once had. I think they're real.
Well, the one thing about Toronto, that has had to do with exhaustion and fatigue as much as anything, especially with Lowry. And that's one thing they're able to avoid this year by not overextending Lowry throughout all these minutes and all these games. He should be fresh for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just worry. I worry that when things get tough that you start to revert to bad habits. And if they're down 2-1, say, or something like that, they're in a hole. I want to see how they do.
Yeah, I mean that's the great unknown there, but man, these Eastern Conference playoffs could be interesting. I honestly think one of those top 3 seeds is going to get beat in the first round.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't know who it's going to be at this point, and who knows who that top 3 seed is right now as we speak. It's Indiana sitting there at the 3 spot.
You ready for Philly? Is it going to be Philly?
Philly, I mean, look, there's a lot of fluidity there. And Cleveland, they're still on a road trip right now. I mean, they could drop a few more games. They could slip into that and be entrenched in that 4-5 type of range.
That's going to be fascinating because no one wants that, right? Like, if you're Toronto, could you imagine if they're like, great, Cleveland slides to the 4?
Yeah.
Really? Are you kidding me?
Play them second round.
Yeah, come on. Right? So, yeah, no one's going to want to be on the other. And that's how I look at Cleveland, is that for all their faults, for all the badness, for everything else, nobody wants to play them.
Right.
Nobody wants to play him because you got to deal with LeBron.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you don't want
to
play LeBron. All right, let's talk about the back half of the Western Conference bracket, specifically the San Antonio Spurs, who have dropped to 10th after a loss to Houston on Monday, a blowout loss for that. And they're supposedly going to get Kawhi Leonard back at some point this week, maybe as early as Thursday. Does Kawhi Leonard solve their problems? Does Kawhi Leonard coming back for the final 3-plus weeks of the regular season, does that push them back into the playoff picture? And if they get in, does that make them a real threat?
I mean, if it's the Kawhi Leonard of last year, yes. But he's been out for how long? And he was out for how long before that?
He's only played,
that?
I think, 9 games this season.
It's tough. It's really tough to come back and get in that groove right away. And you may even see it for a game or two, and then kind of reality sets in. It takes a while to get into game shape. And so, yeah, I mean, if Kawhi Leonard is like the third place in the MVP voting, Kawhi Leonard, that solves a lot of problems, and that makes him very dangerous. I don't think you can count on that. Who knows? I mean, that's the weird thing with injuries. You have absolutely no idea how these guys are going to be when they come back. No,
I think he's able to come back, be in good enough shape, eventually come playoff time to play 30, 35 minutes. I think the biggest question when he comes back is how do he and LaMarcus Aldridge blend together on the court? LaMarcus has had a great year. And a lot of that's been the fact that Kawhi's out, so he becomes more of the focal point on offense. But one of LaMarcus's issues over the last 2 years has been playing with Kawhi Leonard, trying to figure it out on the court. He hasn't really had to deal with that this year. Now he comes back. How do they mesh? How quickly do they mesh? And they'll mesh fine to some degree, but if you wind up in that 7 spot, you've got to face Houston or Golden State, or even the 8 seed, same problem. You've got to be perfect to have any shot at competing in that series. And I'm not sure that chemistry can be, you know, unlocked in the span of about 3 weeks.
You know, it's funny because I thought we came into the season thinking the West was so loaded, right? And it was like, it's ridiculous. And it's not, hasn't really turned out that way. And a lot of this had to do with injuries and things of that nature, right? But every one of those teams after Houston and Golden State is flawed in some way. You know, Portland, we spent a lot of time talking about them earlier. New Orleans. You know, Utah might be the third best team in the West right
Utah
now.
Utah is good. Maybe the biggest surprise of this year. I mean, Donovan Mitchell, probably rookie of the year. The last month, the way he's come on, it's going to be hard not to vote for him. Quinn Snyder, if they make the playoffs, Quinn Snyder should be top 2 coach of the year. You know, top 3 at worst. They're remarkable.
Like Gobert's a superstar, by
yeah.
the way. People don't talk about him like
and
that.
And they're an example of a team that hits on draft picks. Like Gobert.
Very good.
End of the first round type of guy. Mitchell there. Even Rodney Hood, who they just traded. They have a really high percentage on those draft picks. I think they get beat pretty easily in the playoffs. They wind up 7-8 seed, but this has been one of the most improbable seasons of any team in the league.
If they're anywhere other than the 7-8 seed, I could see them making a run. Because they're legitimately good, and their defense is legitimately good, and Quinn can coach. So, but I mean, eventually they will probably have the same issue they had last year, which is where does the scoring going to come from when you take away the number one option? When you took away Gordon Hayward last year, where was the scoring going to come from? And teams are going to throw everything at Donovan Mitchell. And it's hard for a rookie to thrive in that kind of environment. Where's the scoring going to come from? Mm-hmm. That's their issue. You know, Minnesota is one that, without Jimmy Butler, this is just a totally different situation. But I was really high on Minnesota before the injuries. And I thought that was a team that could legitimately...
Even with that defense that really, for the most part, didn't play well this year.
Yeah, because their defense was starting to play better. And Karl Anthony Towns is becoming a top 10-ish kind of a player.
Yeah.
You combine him with Jimmy Butler, and that's really good.
Yeah.
That's really good. So I was really high on Minnesota. I was high on OKC earlier this year, too. I don't even know who to pick anymore. I'm not sure who to be high on. Utah, I guess. Portland?
I don't know.
I don't know.
At this point, though, it's just, like, the Western Conference Finals are the NBA Finals.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, Houston, Golden State, and, yeah, whoever wins probably going to have a cakewalk of a time in the Eastern against the Eastern Conference guy that comes out.
It's kind of tough to look at it that way, but yeah, that's probably.
I mean, it is.
True.
I mean, like, how do you?
I mean, get all the way out there. You know, the whole league is there.
Can anybody sit back right now, as we speak, in the middle of March, and say that Cleveland, with its team, can compete with one of those top 2 teams?
I don't think they can. I still think they're going to get there.
I've said this before, and I've written this before. I said the next team to beat Golden State in a final, the next team that beats them is going to be the Boston Celtics. I didn't know when that was going to happen.
Right.
But the next team to beat them in the final is going to be Boston. That could be as early as next year because I think Boston, Tatum, Brown, developed Hayward back. Maybe not this year with another high draft pick, but
right.
You know, just the way they operate. I mean, they are going to be, I think, starting next year, the biggest threat in the Eastern
Conference. They're really close. I mean, when I was saying I was down on them earlier relative to this season, they are very close. And, you know, the Hayward thing, by the way, they either got to shut that down completely or just open it up.
Well, I mean, privately, look, you know, Brad Stevens is, you know, he was more unequivocal recently when he said he's not playing this year. But everybody kind of keeps the door open. I don't even mind that Hayward keeps the door open. He's a player.
He's a player.
And he's a competitor. And he wants to go out there and play. But there are people behind the scenes. People, not I'm talking high-ranking people, that leave this door ajar. That you know, when you ask them privately, they say, look, there's a chance that he could come back. I just don't see it. And I wrote this in mid-February. You know, at the All-Star break, I looked at him. I looked at the ankle. He was wearing those short sneakers. You could see the ankle. And it was purple. Like, it was still purple, and it was still swollen. I don't know how you come back that quickly from that type of when it looks like that at that point in time. I just don't know how you do it. And, look, Danny made the point that I've been trying to make for a while is that physically you get back fine. You can do everything great. Mentally, that's like another month, 2 months. People laughed at me at the time that I said that Gordon Hayward's next game should be in Summer League. It should be. He should be playing Summer League and playing in an ultra-uncompetitive environment compared to the regular season or the NBA, and just get comfortable out there on the floor.
I just remember Paul George coming back a couple years ago, kind of against his will.
And he played, what 13 minutes
a
game?
And it was awful.
Yes.
It was terrible, and it was no good for anybody. And, you know, like, that's not a great scenario right there to put, you know, to bring your new max guy out and be like, hey, see what you got. And they're like,
plus,
nah.
Boston's playing with house money this year.
Correct.
I mean, you've got a 21-year-old in Jaylen Brown, a 20-year-old in Jason Tatum out there playing 30-plus minutes for you. You've got your superstar, the guy you just signed off the bench. I mean, you have nothing. If you get to the conference finals this year again, that's the win. Like, that's the big win. Now, before some of the injury issues they had before the Cavaliers trade, I thought they could get to the finals. But if you make a deep playoff run this year to build some momentum going into next year, that's the win.
Yeah, no, I mean, I legitimately think they could lose in the first round and they could make the conference finals. If you wanted to convince me that they could make a final because a couple breaks go their way, I wouldn't think you were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they're all over the map. But yeah, it is house money, and you know, when Hayward comes back, I think they then become that next team.
Yeah, they're right there, Paul. Enjoy Portland over the next however many days you're out here. I'm a resident now, so
better than the blizzard.
Yes. Avoid the Northeast the next couple of days at all costs. Thanks for joining me, man.
Anytime, dude.
Everyone knows how important stretching is before an event. So does Mattress Firm, except it's your dollar. Your budget stretches further when you're shopping in America's Neighborhood Mattress Store. It's a true home run, and you'll have a ball. They're the head coaches when it comes to mattress expertise, but know this. They are more than mattress experts. They have a game plan that helps you transform your mattress into a bed, from adjustable bases and sheets to headboards and bedroom decor. They have you literally and figuratively covered up like your favorite cornerback. Go to mattressfirm.com/podcast to see what deals are happening as I read this sentence to you. They even offer you a 120 sleep night trial to ensure perfection and 120 night low price guarantee so you know you paid the perfect price. Talk about a 1-2 punch, a knockout, if you will. Score big with a perfect bed. Head to mattressfirm.com/podcast to get the play-by-play on how you can monumentally improve your sleep today, tonight, and tomorrow. All right, joining me now on the podcast, one of the best beat writers out there, Anthony Slater, covers the Golden State Warriors for the Atlantic, is it? Is it the Atlantic?
Hey, you're like all the half the PR teams in the league that put the Atlantic.
You'd think PR guys would maybe know better?
Right? You would think, and they should in baseball. Right now there's like 23 Athletic beat writers in baseball. But I will say it is very similar, and it's like almost this, I don't know. If you're on autopilot, which I think in game 72 of a season, then you might – have a couple letter typo.
Okay, we can live with that for now. If you get to the finals and it's like you and all your other guys still being, you know, on that big whiteboard as the Atlantic, then you've got some problems there.
Yeah, that would be a problem.
Speaking of autopilot, the Golden State Warriors this year.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the season, they're going to wind up with like at most 17 losses probably, but the perception is that this team has been on autopilot for the entire season. That they're kind of coasting through this, that they are a little bit indifferent to the regular season. How much truth is there to that kind of perception?
I think a decent amount, because if we were just grading the Warriors off, did they play well tonight, they'd probably be about 500. this season, which isn't good. You know, did they play to their standards? That's how Kerr always says, you know, were we up to our standards tonight? He wants it 4 out of every 5 games. They've probably given it 2 to 3 out of every 5 games this season. They've had games in Sacramento where they just flob the ball around, turn it over 25 times, win, but you're in the locker room postgame, and it's like they lost. So the defense has slipped from they were second in the league last year with an efficiency rating around 100, 101. Now it's 103.7, 103.8 area. You know, the turnovers are even more of a massive issue. And then just eye test on the court. They're just kind of lulling around at times. But the record is what the record is. Like, and that's the thing. Like, Kerr regularly says, I don't blame him. I understand why this is how it is. He always compares it to the Chicago Bulls' third title team that he was on. It was actually the sixth Bulls title team. But they started the year 8-7. They were having team meetings. They kind of waved through the playoffs. I think they had 14 losses at the break, which the Warriors had around 14. And then they turned it on in the second half and won the title still. So
Kerr seems concerned, though. I mean, every time I look up, you know, once a month, it's him publicly saying there
once
are problems.
Week.
Once a week. Okay, I'm only checking in on the once a month calculus. It's having the guys run the huddles. It's different things he's trying. How would you describe his level of concern with where his team's at?
I think he's just trying to figure out the proper ways to coach this team and get him motivated. I think if you have a true serum conversation with him, and the truth is you don't even need true serum, he is about as honest as it comes. He understands that it's first world problems in the NBA, what they have, and he still views them very confidently that they're going to win the title. It isn't like, uh-oh, like things are crumbling beneath him, but he's talked about how year four of a coach, suddenly the voice kind of starts to be faint a little bit. He understands the reason for the lack of motivation, which is, you know, human nature, considering the runs they've been on. And he's just strategically trying to, bite at them through the media, you know, do little things here and there that try to get them going for, you know, 6 to 7 game bursts at a time. And it's worked. Like, everyone's like, he let the players coach. Like, that was one of their most engaged games all season, and it was against the Suns. They would have never – they've had some bad home losses this year or just bad performances even if they won. Suddenly that game, he does that. They come out, they win by 46. They were locked in, and it's just I don't know. It's just little games within the season for him, and he just does it very honestly, and he likes to use the media to do it a lot of times.
As we speak, Steph Curry's got another ankle injury.
Yeah, another right ankle injury.
Yeah, I mean, and these things, when the ankle comes up with Steph Curry, it's like, you know, any other significant injury for any other player. That's the one area you don't want to hear Steph deal with an injury. What do you think the Warriors' concern is on that, on Steph's ankle?
Growing. Definitely growing, because, look, I mean, you'd have to contextualize this within his entire career, right? I mean, it was the right ankle back in 2010, 11, 12, that he was rolling a lot. He was rolling on normal moves. There'd be inbounds where he's pushing it up court. There's no feet around him, and he's just rolling. They weren't major sprains, but they're just consistent sprains that eventually led to, in 2012, he has 2 surgeries. It actually set up the Warriors franchise incredibly. It allowed for the 4-year, $44 million deal that set up all the roster construction that they had since then. But the 2 surgeries fixed it, right? The problem, nothing to 2016, then suddenly December of this year, in New Orleans, a bad ankle sprain. A freak, could have happened to anyone. It's a normal basketball injury. Comes down, sprains the right ankle really bad. There was a lot of concern in New Orleans that night. I remember he was crutching by us in the locker room to the x-ray room, and like, it was a really dooming like mood around the team. They come back. He actually talks to the media that night, which I thought was the first good sign. And then within it, he said, we did like the x-ray type thing, and it is like... what was fixed surgically was not screwed up with this ankle sprain. So there was some optimism coming out of that. But then, he misses about a month, comes back scorching for 6 straight games. But then he's at a shoot around randomly, and he just rolls his ankle while shooting around by himself. Mm. And that's that's not a normal. You don't hear about guys just rolling their ankle while they're shooting around. That's more of the injury he used to have back early in his career. And then, he came back, played 22 straight games, but then last week rolls his ankle on Zaza Pachulia's foot. And when I say ankle, it's always right ankle, the surgically repaired one. And then, you saw the one against the Spurs. I mean, that's kind of non-contact. I mean, it was a tough, like, traffic layup thing, but he didn't roll it on foot. He kind of just rolled it on the floor. And it wasn't a devastating injury, but he showed some agony afterwards, and that, to me, it was signaling not I'm in so much pain. It was like, again, this is happening again, and it's not serious. He could probably play. He tried to push to play yesterday. They're going to sit him out through this current road trip, but there's concern that now, not that like he's going to miss the rest of the season, but just that maybe this happens in game one of a West Finals against Houston, and then you're in trouble.
You know, it's funny. We said last year or a year ago in the summer that, you know, Kevin Durant was basically jumping on the bandwagon, that it's superfluous for him to be here. That team won 73 games, took a freak Draymond Green incident to not win the finals once again. But, I mean, you can certainly make a strong argument that without Kevin Durant, they're not champions last year because of the way he played in the finals. Yeah. And it seems likely he's going to be extremely impactful with Steph kind of being a little bit up in the air with his ankle.
So Steph goes down December 4th, New Orleans. They're at Charlotte the next game. And there's some, like, how are the Warriors going to play without Steph? There's a lot of that talk. You go to Charlotte. I remember at that shoot-around, Curry's in crutches, and Kerr was like, you know, it's going to be spread throughout. You know, and we were asking, well, what kind of burden's Durant going to take? Oh, it's just going to be, you know, it's going to be everyone has to pick it up. You know, that language. But then that night, Durant comes out, and I think he has like a 37-10-10-4. He had his first triple-double of the season. And then they go 9-2 over the next 11 games as Steph sits out. They have the best defensive rating in the league because Draymond turned it up on that end. They really locked in. That was when Durant was getting Defensive Player of the Year buzz, had the most shot blocks in the league. And he was also, shot attempts were up, rebounds were up, assists were up, points were up. He cranked it on. Steph's been back. He's kind of, you know, taking the back seat again. What happens last night in San Antonio? Steph, or against the Spurs, Steph sprains the ankle. Durant turns it up, scores 15 in the fourth quarter. It looks like MVP-type Durant. So he's shown that he has that gear. I think the Warriors would almost like to see it more even when Steph's in the lineup. But it is, first world problems with this team. I mean, Steph Curry's ankle is a concern, but they can definitely manage without him.
Is he more relaxed, Durant, this year? I mean, you've been around this guy since Oklahoma City. I mean, how is he different in any way this year?
Hey, what day is it, basically? You know, sometimes. Yeah, I mean, look, he's a champion now, so that's kind of off his back. But something that's said in the media has angered him, or something going on in his life, maybe he's whatever about. Or, you know, sometimes he's really locked in for a five-game stretch and you see these huge numbers. Sometimes he's not for a while and he kind of fades to the background a bit. That's just kind of him. That's just his personality. It's kind of a day-to-day thing with him. But I think he's definitely more settled as a human. You've seen he's been much more willing to speak out on pretty much every subject, but particularly social issues, which, you know, every athlete at this point seems like they're more willing to do. But so overall, to answer, yes, but he's still kind of a little up in the air on a lot of
things. All right, so you mentioned first world problems with this team, and they are when you have this much talent. But the bench this year, yeah, a little bit different. And Iguodala especially. I mean, this is a guy last 3 years, right around 35% from three. As we're talking, he's in the low 20s, mid-20s, yeah, at this point. How big an issue do you think that is? And what's gone wrong there? I mean, why is he now 10 points off what he's been the last few years?
He was, like, really in his head in the first half. And I say first half, really first 58 games, right? The All-Star break had almost the first two-thirds of the season. And people were concerned about his shot, but nobody seemed to be more concerned than he was. But every time you approach him, was like, you know how, I don't know how much you've talked to Iguodala, but it's like, oh, I'm going to retire. I'm going to quit.
Yeah, I've heard that. I've heard a little bit. I was hearing that, though, even before Golden State. Yeah, like, that wasn't.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you can't, like, dig into it with him because he just won't go there with you. But you could tell, I mean, he's been afraid to get to the line. This is a guy, it's crazy because I had to go back and look at it, but Philadelphia, like year 3-4 in Philly, he was averaging like 7-8 free throw attempts per game. He was shooting like 82% from the line. I couldn't even believe it when I saw it. Now, 60s on free throws, he's had problems. Remember, they were hacking him in the finals a few years ago? So when he's been on fast breaks early in the season, you know, he'd be passing it off a lot. I don't know how many times he's passed up layups this year. You mentioned the threes. I mean, if you're shooting 23%, he's gone stretches of, like, he's gone a month without hitting a three this year.
But then
year.
Your usefulness is limited. I mean, as good a defender as he can be, I mean, if you're not making the corner three, how long can he keep him out?
It's not
there?
Even just missing it, it's passing it up. And it wasn't just him. It was McCaw, who was 33% last year, which isn't good, but it's been 23% this year and passing them up. But with Iguodala, of course, you know, the Kerr and the players are like, you know, he'll be there when we need him. He's always shown. He's 2015 Finals MVP, was really good in Game 5 last year. It's kind of like he definitely fell off a cliff in that first half. He's never been as bad as he was. But saying that, his six best games this season were the first six games out of the All-Star break, six straight solid games. Hit, I think, four out of his first seven threes out of the break to rise up to about 26% from three for the season. But then he sprained his wrist, and he's now out right now. We'll see how he comes back. But I do think they were encouraged that he came back from the break, somebody asked him about German doctors. He's like, you know, there's German doctors in the United States, too. He just popped down to L.A. The knees look better, spry. I think he dunked 10 times since the All-Star break, which he wasn't doing a lot before. So there's optimism that what they saw before he sprained the wrist will be what they'll get, at least semi-consistently, come playoff time. Rest of the bench, I mean.
Do you think Kurt trusts them, though, in the same way as he did? Or are we going to see, like, extended minutes even for the starters when we get to the playoffs? Because I don't think it's going to be, look, 16-0 in the Western Conference play. It's not going to happen like that again.
He trusts Andre Iguodala, just because Andre Iguodala has proven himself. And that is going to be their fifth guy at closing halves. The question is, does he trust the rest of them? Look, the center position is in a really weird spot where Zaza Pachulia's diminished this season and has now been plucked from the starting lineup. And JaVale McGee is the starting center on the defending
would
champions,
which
is a whole entire different subject. David West actually having an incredible year at age 37. But
he was always going to age well, wasn't he? Like, he doesn't play above the rim. Like, he makes the elbow jump shot.
Yeah,
I mean, it's just
he's going to age well. But what's weird, he's averaging like his second most shot blocks in his career this year. He's only playing like 13 minutes, and that's the thing with him. He has definitely been their fifth best player, but he can't finish games because he can really only give you 12 minutes a night. So it has to be Iguodala. The question is, once you start to get to 7, 8, 9, 10 in the rotation, it hasn't been what they thought it was. Omri Caspi had a bad year. Is having a bad year. Nick Young is just as lost on defense as you'd expect. I think they thought they were going to bring Nick Young into their system and put him in the Warrior cocoon, and suddenly he was going to be this 3-and-D. You know, he knows exactly when to rotate.
Doesn't always work like that.
Yeah, no.
Ask Washington.
And it hasn't. He's had a few games where he comes out and hits 5 threes, and you're like, oh, that's who they signed. But then he just loses guys for 5 threes on the other end. To answer your question, I think there is going to be a lot more Draymond Green at center, and instead of 32, 33, 34 minutes for their stars in important playoff games, remember, for them, important playoff games probably won't start until really the West Finals. Mm-hmm. It'll be 38, 39, 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a good trump card to have, especially when all year you haven't loaded with them with those minutes.
Do these guys, I mean, how serious do they take Houston right now? I mean, is it on their radar? Is it any more on their radar than some of these other second seed, the San Antonios of the world in the past?
It's becoming more on their radar. So they beat them. Houston beat them maybe a couple months ago before this 18-game win streak started in Houston. And they were snickering in the locker room at anyone that was suggesting that, like, this was becoming like the next big West rivalry. Like, they weren't having it. Mm-hmm. And they have kind of publicly kept that snickering going over the last month. I mean, you probably saw Draymond talking about, like, Daryl Morey says, you know, they're built to beat us. Noted. You know, we'll see you down the line. And they do laugh at Daryl Morey. They think him publicly coming out and saying that stuff, they laugh because they know, like, Bob Myers isn't going to come out and say that stuff. Durant thought the Clint Capella quote was funny, and he came out and kind of went against Capella. But they're taking them more serious. Behind the scenes, and how can you not? I mean, because look at this win streak that they got going. It's not just – they're not just beating cupcakes. I mean, these are road back-to-back wins in Denver and Utah, you know, what Oklahoma City-Milwaukee road back-to-back. But at the same time, like, you know, we asked Draymond the other day about the Houston win streak, and he goes, yeah, you know, it's a good win streak, but how about that New Orleans win streak? That's the one that's really impressed me, because that came right after the Cousins. You can just tell they're trying to downplay it and show Houston that they're not as concerned as they really are.
I wonder if hunger plays into this at all at any point. Like, Houston, you know they're hungry. I mean, Harden never won a championship. Chris Paul never been to a finals. Yeah. They got a lot of guys there that I feel like they can taste it. And I wonder if that's a variable in all this, especially when it comes to Golden State, who is – I mean, how do you fire up the engine? I mean, at what point does that become an issue?
You can. I mean, it's human nature. They should be more desperate. Houston should be more desperate. This title would mean so much more to Houston than it would to the Warriors. I mean, like, the Warriors obviously want to win the title, but, you know, if they lost this year, it'd get interesting around there, and there'd be a lot of, like, oh, are they going to, you know, try to shake up the core? But really, they'd just probably say, you know, we'll come back and try to win it next year. Houston, like, the desperation around the moment in Chris Paul's career, and that plays in the playoffs. You know, I think the same thing with Oklahoma City. As big issues as they have, you know, fundamentally with Westbrook and all that, like, how much are they going to crawl and scratch to try to keep just their franchise alive, basically, in the playoffs? That's why I don't think the Warriors want to see the Thunder in the playoff series. I think they'd win, but can you imagine, like, a 2-1 game 4 in Oklahoma City and just, like, the ferocity that entire team would come out with, where the Warriors, they just kind of have this mentality, and they're right in a lot of ways. Like, ah, you know, maybe we'll lose this game, and then we'll come back and win next game, or, you know, and maybe that will get to them. But the one thing, I'm not even going to say Houston misstep with this, because if I was Houston, I'd be commenting about how good I am too. But that's as I've said, gotten Draymond Green's attention, where I think now Draymond Green, game one, it's like, all right, Houston ready to go. Instead of, if they had maybe downplayed themselves, or if they maybe just didn't rattle off this win streak, maybe you don't get an engaged Draymond till game three. And an engaged Draymond is an engaged Warriors team, basically.
It's funny. It's been like this before, but never has the Western Conference playoffs been the coronation like it is now. Like, there's nobody in the East that's touching any team in the West. I've been pushing Boston as hard as anyone. And look, Boston plays well against Golden State. I mean, you've seen that last couple of years, but they're not going to win a series like that. Cleveland, give me a break. I mean, they when you're the worst defensive team, you're shaking your head. You still think the Cavs have any chance of...
No,
they got no chance.
I almost like Toronto more than the other two, in a weird way.
But they're so young in that second unit. Like,
it's like
an accomplishment for Toronto and Boston to get to the finals.
I think the best finals matchup, just because of how they've matched up over the years, it would be Boston Warriors. I think at the same time, I mean, entertainment purposes, as much as it seems stale, like just LeBron against the Warriors, this is still LeBron, the greatest player ever, one of the two, three greatest players ever against one of the greatest teams ever. So that might be entertainment factor still the best. But I would like to see, you know, a Celtics Warriors, especially either of Hayward's back, which you know better than me if that's a 0% or a 1% chance.
They like to, you know, they say no. And then behind the scenes, there are some pretty high-ranking people that are like, you know, if we, you know, push in the playoffs a little bit, they'll come. I just can't see it. I can't see. I wrote this like a month ago. Like, his ankle's still purple. Like, what are you thinking? You're like, and Danny Ainge said this the other day. Like, you've got to get over the mental hurdle after the physical one. That takes a while to do that. So I don't see that happening this year.
Yeah, I mean, especially imagine if it's game four of an East Finals.
Yeah, like, come on back for
like
Cleveland. Like, come back. The same place you broke your ankle,
yeah,
Gordon.
Like, no, come back for like a summer league environment.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying there.
Yeah, but I just think if I was, you know, making a preference, I'd like to see a potential rivalry moving forward, which is, you know, a Celtics Warriors, or even, it's not going to happen this year, but like a Sixers Warriors like series would just be fun to me. Obviously, I just don't think Philly is ready, but you're right. West Finals already, I mean, we're a month from the playoffs, and we're already sitting here like, ooh, man, that Rockets-Warriors series.
Yeah. Last question for you. The Kevin Durant likes to joke about his future. Been having some fun with, I'm going to go to whoever wins the championship and all that jazz. But any reason to suspect that he's not a Warrior for the foreseeable future?
No, you know, I talked to him in Atlanta just to kind of clarify on it, because it's funny. I remember going to that shooter, I'm like, I'm going to ask him, I'm going to talk to him about this, because he is a free agent this offseason, and everyone's talking about the 2017 class filled, or 18 class filled with people, 19 classes filled with people. Nobody mentions Kevin Durant, even though technically if he wanted, he could go anywhere he wants in 4 months. So I asked him, he said, no chance, 100% coming back to the Warriors next year. I think, and he even said he wants to sign a long-term deal soon for stability, and he would have already. It just has made sense the last few years. The first year he came to the Warriors, it made sense to do the 1 year, because then he could get to his 10-year, which was, you know, that next threshold, the 35% max. Then last year he decided he wanted to take less. But he didn't decide he wanted to long-term take less, just a 1 year take less. I could see this offseason, because they have his early bird rights, which means he can do 175%, which gets him to his max if he wants it. I'm not even sure he'll go to his max, just because he's continually talked about he doesn't need all the money that's out there for him. But he's going to go into the new San Francisco arena. They're going to go into that arena with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant as the two pillar megastar superstars. Now it gets a little bit more questionable when we start talking about Klay Thompson and Draymond Green as that core moves forward. But as you know, there's like levels in the NBA to superstar. Yeah, they have four all-stars, but there's a there's a huge drop off between the Steph KD realm and the Klay Thompson Draymond Green realm. They're going into the San Francisco arena with Steph and KD. Now, when you go 3 years, 4 years, 5 years beyond right now, I'm not guaranteeing anything with Kevin Durant. I've been there with Kevin Durant. I don't think he knows. His kind of mind can be in different places. I think there's a chance at some point he wants a year in Washington. I think maybe a swan song in Oklahoma City is not completely out of the question as we get towards mid-30s. He's kind of – I could see him romanticizing that at some point late in his career. Or elsewhere. Who knows how it formulates? Who knows how his body holds up? But the Warriors are getting the meat of his career. You know, he was 28 last year, 29 this year. They're going to get him into his 32, 33, 34 season at least. And, you know, that's the part of the career you want.
And he and Steph, good, no issues?
No. You know, they willingly take back seats to each other at times. And, you know, the quotes are all good. Behind the scenes, it's all good. They're getting so much money. Steph's so settled as a dad of about to be three, and all the endorsements and everything he gets. And, you know, no, they're just so good that everyone still knows the level where they're not there. Neither of them are going to get the MVP, probably playing together ever. Not going to get it this year, but nobody's sitting here saying they're not, you know, two of the top five players in the league. And they're, as long as they're content with that, they're going to be content, you know, being favorites to win the title.
Swan song in Oklahoma City. Well, will
I don't know.
Will Sam Presti be there to sign him? there's a better question.
How that, you know, how that kind of goes later in the career, beyond the career, and when the jersey retirement goes at some point. That's going to be fascinating. The 30 for 30 on it, whatever you want to talk about. I mean, look, Shaq had his day in Orlando, and that was only like a four-year little mini run in Orlando. So it's weird to talk about now, but there will be a Durant Oklahoma City something at some point.
Anthony Slater, keep up the great work, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That's it for this week's episode. Thanks to my guests for joining the show. As always, you can download archived episodes on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, really anywhere you can download podcasts. While you're there, post a comment, leave a rating. You know I appreciate it. And I'll see you next week.